हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Lesson 28. Only those who are addicted to sinful or unlawful acts, page 61. Only such foolish men of demoniac principles do not want to serve Godhead. Okay, so this is... Yeah, further explanations. No? 28. Ah. Yeah, Upanaya. Okay. Find Muda, Naradama, Mayaya Pratigyana, and Asuram Bhavam Asita. Let's see. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. The Mudas are those who are grossly foolish, like hard-working beasts of burden. They want to enjoy the fruits of their labor by themselves, and so do not want to part with them for the Supreme. The typical example of the beast of burden is the ass. Right, so... Here, hard work. So generally, as we were saying this morning, we would typically take this to mean, you know, you're just very common, hard-working, laboring class. So on one level, it can mean that. But on another level, it can also mean that, you know, anyone who's working hard for material existence, right, without seeing any connection to the Lord, then... You know, they're working hard to enjoy themselves. That's what the donkey is doing. But, you know, he's not... We get probably more out of him than he gets out of his hard labor, you know. But because he's grossly foolish, he doesn't appreciate that. You know, or wouldn't want to appreciate that, you know. Another class of duskriti, or miscreant, is called the Naradhama. It's always nice how Prabhupada uses that to say, the Mudas are that, like that. Another class of nonsense. You know, so that way then you get, you know, it's always... It's called the Naradhama, or lowest of mankind. The civilized human beings are those who have regulative principles of social, political, and religious life. Those who are socially and politically developed but who have no religious principles must be considered Naradhamas, right? So here is that they're developed. Regulative pillars of social, political, religious life, very nicely developed, very sophisticated. But it's not... It's not religious principles, meaning that it's based on actual religion, right? Because here it mentions religious life, social, political, and religious life. So that can even mean that they're following the Vedic literatures and that. And they're very sophisticated, very aspects of the literatures. But the actual religion, like Sanatana Dharma, that they're not catching. So that makes them Naradhama.
So Naradhyanis.
Not necessarily. They means all of these is you have your kind of like your typical example, but the principle is actually generic.
Yeah.
But so you could have one of them who is working very, very hard. You know, it depends where the focus is. the focus is on working hard, getting out there, then it's Naradhamma. I mean, then it's Mudha. If it's their sophistication and all that and refinements in life, you know, like that. But then it's Naradhamma. So in either case, and you know, they may be working hard or not. You know what I'm saying? It means the Mudha is, but he may be more sophisticated and that he may not be. So in either you could get the Jnani. He's working very hard for his position, and you know what I'm saying? In other words, so the focus is on working hard, because that's what a donkey does.
Yeah.
Well, here then the focus is on that sophistication, that development and all that.
So as you said this morning, you could actually have one who has all of these things.
Yeah, but you see is that there's, you know, your different cultures. Some of them it's on working hard and all that. I mean, I don't know if it is now, but I know back in the, like in the 90s, like in Germany, if you had one job, that was considered, you know, you were lazy. You know, you had to have two jobs. So you're out there really working and really developing, working, you know, like that. So the emphasis is on the work, though what they do is very technical, very sophisticated, you know, the social, but the emphasis on the work, so that emphasis, that's the Mudha aspect,
yeah.
You know, like that. Or where they see they're very, you know, sophisticated and all that. That's the Naradhamma. Mm. Okay. Nor is religion without God religion, right? So this is the point: is they have their religious principles of what you're supposed to do. You know, you have to be moral and nice and good and all these different things. And they, but God is not really the point of it. You know what I'm saying? So then, because the purpose of following regular religious principles is to know the supreme truth and man's relationship with Him, right? So you have to know God and what is your relationship. It's not just enough even to know God or to have a relationship, you know, or define it that I'm, you know, servant, but not know who you're serving. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that'll encompass both the persons who are the intellectuals and all that, but they don't do any service, and others who do service but don't know who God is. So then you can get your, you know, your theologians, and then your just, you know, particular person who, you know, is working nicely but doesn't know much.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it catches all these different aspects that are not useful for Krishna consciousness. Because when these are there, the tendency is they don't surrender.
Mm.
Right? The Mudha is already absorbed. He has no time to surrender. Right? The Naradhamma is too sophisticated to surrender. You know what I'm saying? He's too busy with, you know, it's like that. Or this person, either religious, but they're already busy. They're already, you know, speculating or, you know, rendering their activities. But they won't actually surrender to the person and become his devotee. Does that make sense? You know, so that means someone could be a modern definition, a religious person. You know, they give in charity, they're nice, you know, they try not to, you know, at least obviously cheat people and stuff like this, and they go to their, you know, their place of worship regularly. But they're not interested in developing a relation with God. They're doing that as just part of their material progression. Right, and they appreciate that unless you're religious, you're not actually going to be materially prosperous.
Mm.
Right, so they're more intelligent than others, you know, more developed than others. But it doesn't mean that it's not, it won't get in the way of their surrender. Yes.
In that definition, that it's God religion means religion relationship with Bhagavan, with the person.
Yes.
Means. Everybody who is not at that to know the supreme truth and man's relation with him means if he's not.
It means as long as there's some aspect you can say that it's religion, but then we have the element: is it true religion? You know, because
yes.
Prabhupada mentioned that. It means, let's say, if Brahman is their Paramatma, and it's, you know, it's authorized, then you could say that it's religion, but it's not. It hasn't come to the fullest understanding.
Yes.
You know, so here then we'll have mixes, you know, where they accept God as a person. So technically, the concept of Bhagavan isn't foreign. They won't think that's strange. but they can't discern how the Lord is transcendental and how he can come and deal, but still under yoga maya. You know, his internal potency is arranging. So then they'll have the problem of thinking that it's mundane, you know what I'm saying, or something about it. So their only solution is to say he has no form. But they can't accept he has no material form. That they'll accept, but he has a spiritual form. So they can't tell the difference between matter and spirit, because for such religionists, what is the soul? The body. So therefore, spirit is the body. So then God is not comprised of matter, so therefore he doesn't have a body. You know what I'm saying? These are the weaknesses. Does that make sense? But the point is to know the supreme truth and man's relationship with him. So that's what they should have. So these others, there's no real relationship. It means they define a relationship, but it's not actually the relationship. You say is that God is Brahman. That's correct, and we're Brahman. That's correct. You say our relationship with him is that we merge into him. That's not a real relationship. You know, so therefore also the Paramatma realization can have that same weakness. Because in Paramatma realization, you take up service, you're dealing with Bhagavan. You know, but if you go to merge, then you go back to Brahman. That's why then local, you know, Paramatma is in between. So localized specifically, therefore taking that step further, but depending on how you deal, you either move forward or you move back. You know what I'm saying?
That it actually God himself he gives them the intelligence.
Yes.
Kind of miss the point.
Because that's what they want.
But they're in ignorance. Like the child.
They want to be in ignorance.
He wants to play all day, but as a parent we make sure that he doesn't. Wouldn't it be more logical that God will kind of not allow whatever they want? So what?
Once you cross about 16 or 18, then what happens to that relationship where you want to do whatever you want, and then the person who is bigger than you when you were below 18 tells you what to do, and you are supposed to do it?
Doesn't really work.
Huh?
But after 30, it does again.
Sometimes. Yeah, just take it to that distance between 16 and 30 is taking a long time. Okay. So, what happens at 30?
Peace.
Right. And so, what does that mean?
Authority.
Yeah, authority, responsibility. Youth is over. You know what I'm saying? So, it's kind of like you don't have the same romantic concept of, you know, complete abandon. You know, like that. So the idea that the material world, you can just enjoy it and do whatever you like and it's going to go the way you want, then when you come to that realization it's not going to go that way, then you could say one has come to some maturity, right? You know what I'm saying?
Those impersonalists, they seem to be after 60, then. So following the same route.
Yeah, because the whole Grihastha scene didn't work at all, even though they did start listening to their mother. And so then they get frustrated and want to try something else. Does that make sense? Yeah. No, see, because what's the weakness in taking that line? If you take that line that, you know, like a parent, shouldn't God do something about it? So what does that mean?
No free will.
It means no free will, yes. I mean, so that would be the most pertinent one. But it also means that we're not at fault. Yes. You understand? It's God's fault for not being a good parent. You know, like that, you know. Does that make sense? So... But the point is no, he's willing, he's, look at it this way. Because you're looking, how would he... Okay, let's try to think. Okay, let's say, even we say, okay, you know, God is the parent, you know, he should be, you know, applying his parenting skills here, you know, or if not, you know, get a few books, I'm sure. He can read, right, you know, like that, since he's the origin of language. And so then he should, you know, do stuff. So is that parenting skill manifest? Or is it just a concept? You know what I'm saying? It means if your parent is guiding you, are they doing something, or it's just they're just kind of hoping you will?
No, they do.
They do it. Okay. So now, would and okay, and where does this happen? Where does this parenting happen?
Location or?
Yeah. I mean, where's the location?
Home.
Yeah, home. Okay. So now the Lord has created the whole material world and all the facilities that go with it, right? So that there's, you know, air to breathe and water to drink and, you know, all those kind of things like that. So you could say is that he's providing even more facilities than one's own parents are giving, right? You know, he's providing the facilities that your parents are working with. Okay. Then they're going to do also what? So what's another way they'll manifest this good parenting?
Care.
And that will take the form of?
Supply.
Well, I mean, we've dealt with that. We've given the facility. So what about instruction? Okay. So would we consider the Vedic literature to be, you know, by volume enough instruction? Okay. And not only that is that you should get educated, so teachers are provided, so he sends the, you know, the spiritual master. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So at what point does one say, well, the kid himself has to also want to be part of this? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes up is that we're kind of reluctant, you know? That's why we're here. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Could you explain what would be the analogy with Buddhism and impersonalism, you know, Krishna's given?
Buddhism and impersonalism.
Yeah, like he reestablished that, I mean, first he came because Venice Burma is used, he gave the teaching of Buddhism for people, you know, this kind of part of the game. Then he reestablished the Venice product of impersonalism. Yeah, then defeated in person, and then the Chinese. So it's kind of first education.
Why the steps?
Yeah. What? Why the steps were taken?
Didn't you just explain them?
No.
What did you just explain? Oh, okay. They seem to agree, so. Superficially. That's right. So the point is they're misusing the instructions. So if you're misusing something, what's the standard way? What does the parent do? They give you money and you misuse it. Then what? They don't give any money. So if you give them the Vedas, you don't use them, then you take back the Vedas. Right? Because the point is they're using the Vedas to be violent. So you take away the Vedas, which is their basis to say that they can be violent, and then make them peaceful. Right? And then when they're peaceful, then, you know, you can bring back the Veda again. But because now they're you know, voidus, then you have to bring the Vedas back in such a way that they'll accept it. Because the problem was not technically, philosophically, it was culturally. Right? So, you have to throw out the Vedic literature because then you remove the culture. You know, on one level. And then their whole philosophy behind that, though it's not a real philosophy, you know? Then, now they've to work in that way, to keep them busy, then there has to be a little bit of, you know, philosophy. You know, the detachment instead of the enjoyment. Because they're misusing it for karma. So you have to basically lean it to jnana. because that means you won't do activities. Because to have karma go from bad karma to good, you know, that's the problem. But to go from bad karma to no karma, that's easier, right? If you're doing something and somebody says you're not doing it right, one of the first reactions is, okay, I won't do it. That's easy, right? But, you know, oh, okay, and then how do I do it right? Now that's a little more difficult, right? You know, like that. So then that means that you'll remove the you know, that whole element of karma and all that. Doesn't mean that the fundamentals of social life and that are gone, right? Because the Buddhistic, you know, lifestyle and the Vedic is very similar, right? But you're removing the interest in karma, so you brought it to jnana, right? And then because it's in jnana, then there's the element of pessimistic, but because it's not based on the Vedas, then it has to have some other things, you know, so then there's no authority. So what's Brahman, this and that? So there's just nothingness, right? So now you have to bring it back to the Veda. And so bringing it back to the Veda then means you have to be able to establish that all that is being done, means that philosophy and that element of jnana is established, but it still has that same philosophy, right? So the Vedas are being used as authority now, right? Instead of just the word of Buddha. Does that make sense? So then you can substitute Brahman. The Brahman actually is the Lord, and there is substance here. But because you've said there's nothing and it's all illusion, right? Because if it's a substance, why wouldn't I want to try to enjoy it? But there's no substance, so therefore why should I get involved? You understand? So you're actually just taking Buddhist philosophy and covering it and just calling it Brahman, and then using Vedic authority to establish it. You understand? So once that's there, then you come in, and then the Vaishnava Acharyas then establish again the actual conclusion. Does that make sense? In the Gita, the personality of Godhead clearly states that there is no authority above him and that he is the supreme truth. The civilized form of human life is meant for man's reviving the lost consciousness of his eternal relationship with the supreme truth, the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is all-powerful. Whoever loses this chance is classified as a naradhama. Right, so it's a very, very subtle thing here, is that human life, civilized form of human life, so civilized technically means following Veda, following Varnashram, right? Because if you're not following the Veda, technically it's uncivilized, right? So then that means that they're moving in that direction. So it's meant for reviving the lost consciousness. So, but it says whoever loses the chance. It doesn't say whoever doesn't do this. Mm-hmm. It says whoever loses the chance. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that means that opportunity is there, but they're not interested. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? So they come in contact with the devotional process. They come in contact with the actual purpose, but there's no interest. Mm-hmm. So because there's no interest, then you lose the opportunity.
So it's all about desire.
Yeah. Yes.
There's another part of this report which says that they appear sophisticated, but they don't want to hear.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's the point, is that they don't want to take part in the process. And so, you know, they're satisfied with their sophistication. And they're saying. So that's why we have to be very careful about... So in other words... Naradama is the point of that not interested. But they can be following, or they have a very sophisticated, you know what I'm saying? So this can mean the follower of the Vedic culture, you know, who's not interested in hearing about God consciousness. Right? Like that. Or it can mean, you know, the non-Vedic, who they're very sophisticated and very developed in their idea and very proud of that, and so they're not interested in hearing. Mm-hmm. Right? So it can work on all those levels. So it's not just, you know, we always these, you know, we like the, you know, the karmi is, you know, stinky, smelly, dirty, you know, like that, you know, pull them out of the dustbin, you know, like that.
That's the Buddhist?
Hmm?
This is
No. That means we just say karmis. You know, it's just they're all stinky, smelly, dirty. Then within that, then the mudas are more stinky, smelly, dirty because they work hard at the docks all day. So you know, like that, and they speak rough. They burp a lot. You know, stuff like that.
The civilized and the uncivilized.
Well, the mood is, it doesn't say that they're specifically uncivilized. Their focus is on working very hard, and by that working hard, they'll be happy. While the Naradhama is that by being sophisticated and cultured and developed, they'll be very happy. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like it means history is being, means where you have that sophistication, like the Renaissance, you could say, is that kind of like sophistication where the social, political, or religious development, but still it's not necessarily that aspect of surrender to God as a person and be a servant. Yeah, individuals maybe, but in general it's just, you know, that kind of element, you know what I'm saying? So they would consider, so those who now will consider that before that was called the Dark Ages. That was just the Middle Ages, right? The Dark Ages. Why? Because they weren't interested in the social, political, and religious development. They were more like mudas. They just went along with day-to-day life. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Maharaj, like those who are demanding secular state,
then call
them
Naradhamas. That we'll see. Let's just go through here. No, this, it means here it's talking about the sophistication. So they have the intelligence, they have the culture that they could easily take up Krishna consciousness. They wouldn't have a problem in, you know, being able to contemplate philosophy or follow the regulations of culture, because they're regulated, they do all these different things. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Like you see is that the, you know, your common man, he's working hard, he's worrying about working, you know, getting a job and that and stuff like that. Then you have a class that's higher than that, that they're more about their social status and their position and this. They're working even generally harder than a muda. But the focus is not on the hard work. The focus is on the social status and the power and the influence. In a sense, so the consciousness is in a different place. It's not necessarily that they're not all doing the same thing. It's just what they're focusing on. Does that make sense? The kitchen helper is also there stirring the pot. He's only just seeing that it doesn't burn. You know, that it comes out nice, that it tastes good. All that doesn't concern him. But would you say he's cooking? Not really. So, therefore, externally, all of them may be doing similar things or overlap. But it's where the focus is, what the mentality is. Is that okay? Okay, when you lose it, then you become the lowest of men. Right? Because otherwise we want to consider the mudas the lowest. Right? So the social position of the Naradhama is higher than the muda, you know, typically. But because he's lost the chance, it actually puts him in a worse position. Because the muda, he just thinks that that's there, but then if you can catch his attention, right? You know, if there's some calamity, then he might be open to listen. Right? Because he's working, I work hard, I'll be happy. He's working hard, he's not becoming happy. He might be able to say something. Does that make sense? But the Naradhama has lost the chance because opportunity is there, and he's, you know, consciously, you know, made the decision not interested.
When social develop is so important, it's difficult to listen to others.
Yeah, it means generally because then they consider themselves very special. Yeah. It's like, you know, Europe was going through social development, right? It means they had been not developing for, you know, like over 1,000 years, right? Things were just sitting there falling apart. Mm. And then they suddenly started developing again. So within not even long from when this development happens, then they consider themselves now superior and go to conquer the world to, you know, spread the good word. You know, though the other cultures had been you know, having a social, political, and religious life in a very developed way, sometimes for hundreds or thousands of years. So they already had that as a standard. Does that make sense? So this is the difficulty. Is that they missed. Yeah. So like you say, they become proud and aren't able to listen to something else. Like, because they also came to India. And even though there's more sophisticated elements, then they're not interested. Mm. So that aspect, that makes Naradhamma.
That means the glass is already full. If you put water, it will spill. They can't hear anything.
Yeah, yeah. No, they can't. They can't. Means that they're already, because, you know, they're so developed. Because it says, those who have regulative principles of social, political, and religious life. Mm. Right? The next class of Duskriti is called Mayaya Apritigyana. Oh, it's on the other side. Mayaya Papritigyana. Or those persons whose erudite knowledge has been nullified by the influence of illusory material energy. They are mostly very learned fellows. Great philosophers, poets, literati, scientists, etc. But the illusory energy misguides them, and therefore they disobey the Supreme Lord. So they have a lot of intelligence, right? And they apply that into so many literary fields. But they're unable to understand the Supreme Lord. So all that intelligence, therefore, is misguided.
Right? Philanthropist or something else.
Can that might be philanthropists, I would put them in the Naradhamas.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because the point is it's not that, because if they have regulative principles of social, political, and religious life, means that there's education.
Mm.
But here is erudite knowledge.
Oh, like that.
You know what I'm saying? It's like generally in most cultures, if you have somebody who you consider your upper class of people, they've gone to school, they know so many things, and they'll use words and quote things from school that, you know, you never cared about. And they somehow or another remember it, you know? And so, you know, you would call them, you know, educated, but you wouldn't say they're erudite.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that amongst them you might not have someone who's erudite. But then, when the erudition becomes the main identity, then they take on this Mayaya Paridhyana. You know what I'm saying?
These are the jnanis, then?
These jnanis would go in here, yes, like that. But it's broad enough that it counts everybody, because we want to be able to identify those who are following Vedic culture, those who are not. Because the principle is still the same, though one is better situated than the other, but still it's not ideal. Does that make sense?
I would just
to
know, what is the meaning of erudite?
Erudite means scholarly.
Scholarly.
Yes.
Can we say that those Maya Paritagyana, they are more sophisticated than Naradas?
No, I wouldn't say. Just because they're scholars doesn't necessarily make them erudite. If you've ever hung out with academics, sometimes they're pretty
so
gross.
But erudite usually refers to their knowledge, not to their sophistication.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's generally they're very knowledgeable. But what we're saying is you might have somebody who would be typically in the Naradhamma social scene, but their erudition is what's more prominent in their mind.
So
I would say is that what's prominent is their erudition, so they would be Mayaya Pratigyanas.
But those Mayaya Pratigyanas, they can also be followers of the Vedas, the same as we said about Naradhamas?
Yeah. It means like these, you know, Mayavadi scholars, and that they're very scholar, very intelligent.
So their main qualification is their scholarship and developed intelligence?
Yeah. That means that their qualifications to be a Mayaya Paritigyana. Yes.
It's the sophistication.
The mood is, it's the hard work. You know what I'm saying? It's whichever prominent. It's not that any of them are not doing what the others is doing, like that. Like, it's, I've seen where you go to, means now I can't say, but, you know, back in the 70s, you go to somebody's house, and they're very wealthy, and they have a big business and everything like that, but they just sit and talk philosophy. Their only interest is reading philosophy and talking about that and everything. But they're very, you know, hardcore business people. But their focus is on that. So you would say their distraction will be the Mayaya Prajnana. You know what I'm saying? At that point. But then most likely then when they go out to their, you know, to a wedding and other social things, then they would act as a Narayana. Like that. Probably to catch them at work, they would be a Muda. You know? Does that make sense? So it's where the mentality, so these are the four mentalities. Like that. So here is that one's working so hard, he's not going to be absorbed in the Lord, right? One's socially developed, his absorption is so much in the social development that he can't see the Lord. Does that make sense? Or this one is that he's so absorbed in his knowledge that he can't see the Lord. Right? So we get this. We have, like we said before, is that the devotees, means these are someone who the anarta is the identity.
Mm.
So they can't take up devotional service, right? But for the devotees, then these are just anartas, right? They've taken it up because the prominence is devotional service. But until it comes to that pure platform, there's going to be a distraction, right? So the distraction will still be these, right? You know, when you say, oh, I'm just being practical, Prabhu, that's your muda. You know, that's what's going there. You know, the Mr. Politically Correct can't do anything wrong. You know, don't want to do Harinam, don't want to do this and that because you're going to disturb the people. That's the Naradama, you know, Anarta. Mm-hmm. Like that. And the one who's so scholarly and it doesn't make sense and this and that and, you know, have conferences that they just discuss all this jazz, that's called the Mayaya Pahritigyana. Does that make sense? So all it is the anarthas to the extreme, it doesn't allow them to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Right? Because when it's reduced, then they're able to take it up. Does that make sense?
Can we also classify the varnas into it?
Yeah, well, let's finish this and then ask that. Because otherwise, let's finish the last one and then you can do it. Because you can also classify the other. Means it's typical, but it's not that it's just stuck to the particular one. You know what I'm saying? Just like we said, is you can have this mix. It can be anywhere.
Shankas.
Huh?
Just.
Oh, that's another thing. Yes, they have everything. You know, it's like it's not really clear. Yeah, if they were Vedic, then they would be this, but it exists. Yeah. Yes.
And if we're just lazy bums, they would still be not hardworking. They don't do anything.
Well, they're grossly foolish. That you could say. Because a donkey, if it's up to him, he'll stand there and not move. You have to make him move like that. But the devotees were talking. It was Dhananjaya, I think, was saying. Or someone else, maybe it's Guru Das, was talking about how when they were building the Vrindavan temple, because they're doing the foundation, so you have to dig down. So, you know, here the guys just carry it on their head, but over there they use donkeys, these little dinky donkeys, you know, like that. And, so in the morning, like in the winter, like this time, it's really cold, so the donkeys are just sitting there. And they want them to move, so they get them and they start pushing them and pulling on the rope. They won't move. I mean, they said you could beat them with a stick, they won't move. So they would start a fire underneath them. They would start a fire, literally start. And only when the fire's there, then they would move. And once they're moving, then you can keep them moving. But to get them initially to start, kind of like, no, I'm not moving. You know, like that. I'm just cold. They won't move. Once they're moving, then I guess they're foolish enough to. So you do have within the mood of the grossly foolish that element. See, because why is a guy working hard? Why is that guy working like an ass? Yeah, it means either the family needs, the kids need, you know, like that, the government, you know, there's a time, there's something there, and so he's pushed. If it was up to him, he'd sit back and enjoy all day. Right? Because he's also the guy that buys the lottery ticket, right? Because he thinks, oh, may I be rich, and then I can sit back. And, you know. Does that make sense? Like that. So, you know, when they say these four, they're all inclusive. It's just contemplating enough to figure out where everybody fits. You know? But it's not that, oh, no, there's people outside this. No, they fit into this.
It's also very hard work to be a bum.
Yeah, but it's very few are bums, actually. You know what I'm saying? Because the bohemian concept is you present yourself as a bum, though you're actually not necessarily a bum. You know, it's just, it's cool to be a bum.
Mars, isn't it the story of the king, and he was fed up of like his citizens being lazy, so he said all the lazy people, they can come, we have some luxurious accommodation, you can come get some nice eatables like that, and he invited all the lazy people to come, and they came across and went to the house, and then he said, now set it on fire, and he set it on fire, and then like you know, everybody came running out to you except these two guys, and then they were like you know, they felt the flames, you know, and then they would turn over to the other side, you know, and they didn't come out, and he says, yes, they can stay, you know, they're truly lazy.
I think it was just something he was worried about, those who couldn't work and this and that and
something like that.
Yeah.
That his minister told him that people didn't pay enough tax because not all of them were working. The majority were not working. That's the minister.
Okay.
You find out who's lazy.
Okay. So there's only two, yeah. Okay.
Acharyas.
Like that. And so those two didn't have to work and everybody else had to work, you know. Okay. Right. But the illusory energy misguides them, and therefore they disobey the Supreme Lord. There are a great number of Mayaya Pratijnana at the present moment, even amongst the scholars of the Bhagavad Gita. In the Gita, in plain and simple language, it is stated that Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is none equal to or greater than him. He is mentioned as the father of Brahma, the original father of all human beings. In fact, Sri Krishna is said to be not only the father of Brahma, but also the father of all species of life. He is the root of the impersonal Brahman and Paramatma. The Supersoul in every entity is his plenary portion. He is the fountainhead of everything, and everyone is advised to surrender under his lotus feet. Despite all these clear statements, the Mayaya Pahritajnana deride the personality of the Supreme Lord and consider him merely another human being. They do not know that the blessed form of human life is designed after the eternal and transcendental feature of the Supreme Lord. So it's the other way around. They'll say it's, what is it, anthropomorphic or something? It's you make God in your image and like that. That's what they'll claim, but it's actually the other way around. Okay. Yeah, so here, this is your typical jnani, you know, intellectual who then, like that. The last class of Duskriti is called Asura Bhavam Ashrita, or those of demoniac principles. This class is openly atheistic. Some of them argue that the Supreme Lord can never descend upon this material world, but they are unable to give any tangible reasons as to why not. There are others who make him subordinate to the impersonal feature, although the opposite is declared in the Gita. Envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the atheist will present a number of illicit incarnations manufactured in the factory of his brain. Such persons whose every principle of life is to decry the personality of Godhead cannot surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. So here the emphasis is on being dedicated to demoniac principles. Just the demoniac lifestyle is what's important to them. Now they may have they'll have some philosophy about it, and all that, you know. So then, I mean, I think some of your French existentialists might fit into this category, you know, complete hedonistic, you know. And so they make a philosophy just to define their hedonism. Not that they came up with a philosophy and thought, oh, I should be a hedonist if I'm going to be true to my philosophy. No, it's just that they were dedicated to the demoniac principles, and when people would complain about it, they made up a philosophy to defend it. Like that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So then they go against the principles. Like that. That's they're committed to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Why is it mentioned here? There are others who made him subordinate to the impersonal feature, although the opposite is declared in the Gita. You know, Brahmavadi and Mayavadi. Brahmavadi.
No, but they would be Mayavadis. But they're not just intellectuals. They're committed to, you know, sinful life. That's their focus.
Oh,
you know, because
it's demonic.
Yeah, because it means, in other words, they may be from one class or the other, or may be from any of these classes, but it's just, you know, what their lifestyle is not the consideration. It's the where their focus is. So the demoniac life, so means if it means like that, they make up incarnations. In other words, you have someone who's, let's say, a Mayavadi, but he's just focused on philosophy and living that renounced lifestyle. And for him, then, you know, engaging in karma and other things is, you know, useless. But he still doesn't come to the conclusion of surrendering to the Supreme Lord. So therefore, then, he becomes a Mayaya Pahritigana. Right? But you'll have some as that they say they're the incarnation, and then they get facilities and they try to enjoy those facilities and everything like that. So they would be within this asura bhav. Is that, so they may have a philosophy also, and with that they attract people.
Yeah, so they use this as a justification to their, you know,
their demand. Yes. So they may have, you know, so they'll always, it appears here that they'll always have some kind of philosophy. You know, but they're openly atheistic. While the Mayaya Pratigyanis may not be. You know, they may be, but that's not their focus, is being atheistic. Their focus is on knowledge. But here the focus is on being atheistic. You know, so you have them now and again. You don't see them so often, but you see them. They're just so openly about that. Anything you say, they just immediately, you know, others will just, you know, they don't. That wouldn't be what they're into, so they don't make any comment on that. You know, or, you know what I'm saying, let it ride, and then, you know, the situation carries on with whatever it was. It was a, you know, a party or this or that. They don't. But the Asura, no, he has to fight it and everything like that. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. So it's. So your question? Yes. I mean, you have to understand it's very general. So it's like that class can more easily have that, you know, or it would have it in its extreme, you know what I'm saying? But it's not that one couldn't be in another varna and be of that definition. Does that make sense? Good. So your muda would typically be a shudra. Right? It means your asura would be the kshatriya, your naradhama would be your vaishya, and your mayaya pahritigyana would be a brahman. You know, just like your artha, how you say, would be shudra. You know, your artarti would be the vaishya. Your jigyasu would generally be the kshatriya. Your jnani would be the brahman. But it, you know what I'm saying, but it just doesn't typically fall in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that they would have the most means. In other words, someone can be committed to demoniac principles. He could be brahminical, you know, like we see those demoniac philosophers, like that. But you see it in its most extreme form if a kshatriya takes this up,
mm-hmm.
because then he makes a whole, you know, he has facilities, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? How you say? Does that make sense? You know, like our what do you call it? Our said gentleman on acid.
Oh yeah.
You know, like that. Because they'll take this and then they push it to an extreme. Does that make sense? You know. But your Mayaya Pratigyana, that you'll see is the brahminical class will push that to the extreme. You know, your Naradhama generally is the Vaishya cultures that develops all this social, political, and religious life. It doesn't mention about liberation or anything else like that. Social, political, and religious life, because this religious means... So it's generally the lower end of Varnashram and the Artha. So the focus is on Artha.
So it's the middle class, the bourgeois?
Yeah, the bourgeois, generally. But it means... That middle means that the Vaishya. So they may be a little bit more, you know, they had facility and all that. So typically in most cultures, that they would be, you know, your higher middle class or, you know, like that. Or, you know, it can be more than that, but it's just where they focus. So it's like you have some people that are immensely rich, millionaires, billionaires, but they work so hard. That's all their focus is, just on their work. So even though the guy's a millionaire, he's still a mudah. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So he could be a businessman, or he could be, you know, into the military. He's just working to develop like that. You know what I'm saying? It's not balanced. In other words, when the work element is out of balance, then that's the mudah. When the sophistication element is out of balance, then that's your naradhamma. When the intellectualizing is out of balance, and you get the mayaya pravritta jnana. And when the dedication to the demoniac principles and establishing those is there, you know, just like the kshatriya establishes religious principles, you know, they go out of their way to practice them and to see that others do it. So here then the asura means he goes out of his way to practice and establish demoniac principles. Does that make sense?
It means that those who are, you said that out of balance means those who are...
That's overemphasized.
Those who don't overemphasize it. So it means they, when they hear about Krishna, they can surrender. That's the point.
Yeah, you could. But yeah, that's basically is, you could say like that. But generally is that they will see some problem in it. You know, they're not convinced that having facility by working I'll be happy. You know, or means there's a need, they're unable to fulfill it. While these ones, they're perfectly confident that they can fulfill their need through their endeavor. You know, or as Prabhu said, their commitment to lack of endeavor. Yeah. Yes.
So in this Asuram Baba Mashrita, the atheist will present a number of illicit incarnations. So it means that a person who is following so-called incarnation is atheist.
Well, that means that they'll be an atheist. It means all of these are in some way some kind of atheism.
But this is a worse one.
It depends how you put it, but Naradhamma is considered the lowest, because see in the first and the last two, that it's not necessarily they've come in contact with the proper with the chance, you
yes.
know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like that, the Naradhamma has,
yes.
and he's
yes.
neglected it. It doesn't mean he went out, bought a book, and then sticks it on the shelf and neglects it, because it doesn't cross his mind. Naradhamma would be the guy who goes out, buys the books, you know, puts it on his table, you know, and then sometime he has some free time, sits down and reads it, and goes, nah, this is not interesting, and then puts it on his shelf.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That would be the Naradhamma. Just, he has the book, never read it, just put it on there, you know, or looks at it and goes, nice, you know, and puts it on the shelf and forgets about it. That wouldn't be a Naradhamma. Naradhamma means he's decided, I'm not interested in Krishna consciousness. And it doesn't mean one who fell from Krishna consciousness, it means one who's not interested.
Consciously.
Yeah, consciously. But the other ones are unconscious of it. But just because it's they're asuras, so they have to fight religious principles. You know, so they'll fight Krishna consciousness, they'll fight the Krishnas, they'll fight the Jews, they'll fight anybody. Anybody who has a philosophy, you know, that has a religious sense, they'll fight it. It doesn't matter. You know, they're equal poise. You see, all followers of faith equally, right? You know, they're all nonsense, right? Like that. So, is that...
Well, only consider Maya operating? Yeah, more often, because it's here said that they can be even scholars of Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah. No. Because what's the commitment? The commitment's not to the knowledge. The commitment's to the Dhammaniac principles.
Okay.
They may have knowledge, or they may not, but the commitment is to the Dhammaniac principles. The Maya Pratigyana, his commitment is to his erudition. Right? The Naradhamma, his commitment is to his social, political, and religious life, but not in connection with God consciousness. Right? And then Muda, his commitment is to his hard work. So each may have elements of the other, but it's where the focus is what you call it.
You mentioned that Naradhammas are the lowest.
Yes, because they're Naradhammas, means the Adhammas. Nara, Adhamma. So that means of men, they're the lowest. Because the point is the guy's a demon, but he doesn't actually know about Krishna consciousness. So he hasn't really rejected it. But the Naradhamma means he knows about it, he's rejected it. So that makes him the worst. He doesn't know either, because his intelligence is misguided by Maya. You know what I'm saying?
Because it's said here,
he's
been scholars of Bhagavad Gita.
What are you confused about? No, that I know, but what's the confusion?
Because you said that the Naradhammas can reject it.
But here is they know about Gita, but it doesn't mean they understand it about devotional service. It's not that they have an opportunity for devotional service. If they're given that opportunity and they reject it, that's another thing.
So that makes them Naradhammas?
Yeah, then they would be, reclassified. You know that? But that doesn't mean someone who's a jnani and is fighting philosophies, you come along with your philosophy, they just deal and they don't accept the Krishna consciousness, therefore they're Naradhamma. You know, necessarily. This is that they understand, something about it, that it's something that could be practiced or that, but they're not interested. Does that make sense? It's slightly different. Though, it's right on the border.
It looks that one person can be using several categories.
Yeah, but it's just like, do you only perform karma yoga or only jnana or only jnana yoga?
No,
it's whichever is prominent at the time. Because if you're performing the activity, it's not that you're not thinking of something and you're not using intelligence. Right? Does that make sense? But the prominence is the activity, or when you're contemplating something, it's not that you're not doing something. You might be doing something else and thinking about. So then the jnana is the prominent, or the absorption in Krishna is the prominent. So therefore, that becomes the prominent element. Does that make sense? So Buddha Yoga means all these combined. So the demoniac nature is all of this. Now, these are the four elements. Now someone may be one, quintessential, just mudha, like that. He's even got a two-tap tattoo, mudha, like that. It's just
the poster child.
Yes, the poster donkey, right, I'm not sure if you could fit the hogs, dogs, camels, and asses into here, but,
yeah.
The asses definitely go with the first one. That we know.
Dogs would be the...
It's hard to say. These are also other mentalities, because
dogs would be asura.
Could be, yeah. They're not necessarily so intellectual, and they do kind of have a bit of a bite, but then you're going to have a problem with the hogs and the camels, because the camels is there. I would tend to think the camels would be the Mayaya Pratigyan and the hogs would be the Naradhammas.
Sophistication.
Yeah, because the hogs are they're kind of like, they have their own certain sophistication.
Yeah, that's it.
Unseen by others.
Yeah. because they have, it says regulative principle. They work very, means like the hog, if the pigs are there, where they're eating and all that, they won't pass stool. They'll over in the corner. You know, so they're very careful like that. You know, when they sleep, they all sleep exactly. You know, like that. They don't just, you know, here and there, like, you know, the dogs and stuff. You know, they're all just exact. So, you know, it's more developed, you know, social and political.
They're also more intelligent than dogs when it comes to combining stuff.
Yeah. Well, they don't get, in a fight, they don't get, the dogs get all emotional and freaky and all that. The dog, the hog just sits there. You know, when the dog comes by, they just bump it. Yeah, so okay. Yeah, does that make sense? So the thing is this, all these things are just to get an idea, because we know what are qualifications. So therefore, we could understand, okay, the mudha, then he may be prone to lamentation and getting very easily distracted and things like that. And so, does that make sense? You know, so you could see is there, the Naradhama gets distracted by, you know, their own concept of ethics and you know, political justice and other things like this. You know, they're going to get distracted because that's what Vaishyas can get distracted by. You know, like that. Then, does that make sense? You know, so you can understand from the one, the other, what's the connection. It shouldn't be used to anybody who manifests anything like that, and then you go, oh, he's a Shudra, he's a Shudra, like that. It's not, it shouldn't be used that way. All these connections are so you can broaden the understanding, because certain things means these things you discuss in this situation. You know, what's their occupational nature you discuss in another situation. Does that make sense? So between them all, then you can, you know, even in Ayurveda, you have the mucus pylon air, so that will establish also like that. So you know what one does, what the other does. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so through all these different things, then you can better understand the one particular, you know, situation that's being described, because you know what all the background is. But what's very important is to be able to understand what's the prominent aspect, because that's the one that's being described now. So the other ones are okay for giving support, but you don't take it and transfer, oh, so we could define it like this and then take it completely into something else, because then it becomes artificial. Mm-hmm. Because then you're making something prominent that wouldn't be as prominent in that situation. It would be, you know, an aspect of it. Does that make sense? Let's say you have some eggplant, right? And you cut it up into little squares and you fry it very nicely, right? And you put, and at the end, you put, you know, some tomatoes for flavor, okay? Now, in there, you know, you're going to put salt, the regular amount. You're going to put some chili, but you're going to put only a little bit of sugar, right? Just something to cut the edge of anything that might be, you know, gotten bitter from it, you know? But now, you take the same elements, all the same thing, the chili, the salt, the sugar, you know, the eggplant and the tomato, but now you make the tomato prominent. And then you just have some eggplant that's, you know, cut up small, deep fried, put at the end. Now the proportion of sugar is going to be way greater, because the one's a sabji, the other's a chutney. So if one can't tell where the definition is, then one will artificially try to, oh, so that means then we could, you know, take the, you know, how you say, take the cauliflowers and the cheese and just, you know, adjust the proportion and put a lot of sugar in it and call it a chutney. You know what I'm saying? So we miss the principle. What was there is that the tomatoes and eggplant go together. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of which is more. So if the tomatoes, then you know that you could put some, the one. Or this is there, the other one could be there. Does that make sense? We all catch this? Because otherwise sometimes we're looking at it one thing, then we see a connection with the other, then we want to define it according to that. No, it's just a matter of that definition and this one have a connection, because you're dealing with sambandha abhideya and prayojana. So there's always a connection between things. Right? Does that make sense? So then it's a matter of seeing, okay, what adds what to where. So then from the one, you can see that this will be there, that will be there, you can see so many things. Does that make sense? This is the point of where we analyze things, but it still has to be analyzed according to a fundamental points. That's the difference between this kind of analyzation, where you're looking for the essence, and just analyzing, because analyzing means you could go off in any direction as long as there's something to intellectualize on. Right? So the intelligence is going to see the difference or the sameness. So if I can find the sameness in anything, or the difference, then I can, you know, there's kind of like reddish lines here, there's reddish lines on the blankets over there. So blankets and rocks are similar. You know? But that's not what we're looking for. You know what I'm saying? What's the point of it? The rocks are in the garden, that's over there for warmth. So they don't actually. Or you could look at it, okay, they're here for aesthetics, and aesthetics is for creating that, you know, niceness or that attractiveness. So that means it's that warmth and that. So in that way, there's a commonality between the blanket and the rocks. You know what I'm saying? But it's not warmth, it's temperature. You know, it's warmth as the feelings from aesthetics. Does that make sense? So you can see commonality, but you have to be able to tell where it's being applied. That has to be the principle you're using, because otherwise, if you take this other one and then try to apply it, it won't work. Because that's why it's defined in that different way. It's for that situation. But now that you know more information, then when you go to apply it in the one area, you'll be able to get a better effect because you have all this other secondary information or supportive information. It's secondary in this situation. In another situation, it might be primary. Right? So it comes back to what we were discussing before, knowing what's primary and what's secondary. Right? Because we want to be able to think and contemplate and connect things together. But it shouldn't be when we connect it, because we were able to connect it. Now what we connect it to, that becomes the principle. And now we're learning this, and oh, that's this, and so that's the principle, now this is the secondary. No, this is the primary, that's the secondary. And then when you go to study that subject, you'll see this is primary, and this has a connection here, this is the secondary. Then it makes it work. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So these miscreants, and they're all able to appreciate the Lord's position though he comes. Like that. So now this being in the Upanaya section, this means this has to absorb the other. Right, so all the others, those people, he comes and man can't see, right, because of his material absorption, or, you know, his intellectualizing or demoniacizing and whatever it is, you know. So it's like so that establishes. So here it's how you bring that all in, right, to bring near, right. So lesson 29. Only those who are law abiding, faithful men revive their God consciousness when they are in difficulty, in need of money, inquisitive, or aspiring for knowledge. Right? Like, so they're able to, because otherwise here it says law-abiding, faithful men, because you had law-abiding who were not faithful. Right?
How about faithful who are not law-abiding?
You mean like early Christians or something? It wasn't legal to be Christian.
Yeah.
They were faithful but not law-abiding.
Yeah, devotees stealing flowers from the cemetery.
Yeah. 7:16. O best among the Bhartas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. It says begin. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Like the inquisitive just looks interesting. But the Gan is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. That's his prominent focus. Like that. Yes.
Four kinds of pious men? Pious?
Yes.
Necessarily pious?
Means that they're able to do this, it makes them pious.
Okay, so
because
yeah.
Actually connection to Krishna consciousness, that's real piety.
Yeah.
Not being connected to Krishna consciousness, that's real impiety.
Yes.
So that's why we see in the previous definition, somebody could be pious and still demoniac.
Yeah.
You know, like that. So the definition of piety and demoniacness is not based on, you know, ethics and morality and religious principles as defined in Varnashram, but it's based on whether you accept God or not.
The ability to surrender.
Yeah, and accepting if you're willing to surrender.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Sukritina instead of the Duskritina. Unlike the miscreants, these are adherents of the regulative principles of the scriptures. And they're called Sukritina, or those who obey the rules and regulations of scriptures. So here it's defining that unlike the miscreants, they don't follow the scriptures. Or they may practice, but they're not following for the purpose that the scriptures give, which means God consciousness. They are called Sukritina, or those who obey the rules and regulations of scriptures, the moral and social laws, and are more or less devoted to the Supreme Lord. Right, more or less. So then they're able to take it up. Right? On the whole, when the distressed, the inquisitive, the seekers of knowledge, and those who are in need of money are free from all material desires, but when they fully understand that material remuneration has nothing to do with spiritual improvement, they become pure devotees. As long as such purified stage is not attained, devotees in transcendental service to the Lord are tainted with fruit of activities. The search for mundane knowledge, etc. That's what we were describing before. So we shouldn't take those qualities that they're demoniac. No, it's when those qualities are in, you know, how you say, prominent, and there's no, and they're, you know, avoiding or not interested or, you know, staying away from Krishna consciousness or not involved, then you can call that demoniac. Right? But it's, because it's the same anarthas.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? The one is that the muda means he has a great faith in the fruit of endeavor. So if there's any fruit of endeavor, it has that. You know, if they have it, you know, social development, then that's does that make sense? Or in knowledge, or in power, in influence, like that. So you have all these are just standard anarthas. Just when they become overemphasized in one way, then you call it that. If the same thing becomes overemphasized and affects the health, then you'll call it, you know, medicine. You know, means the, you know, the whole medical science. You know, there's too much of this, too much of that.
He mentioned that moral and social laws separate from rules of and regulations of scriptures. And this symptom of piety is supreme. Why is extra mentioned? Why is mentioned separately, social and moral laws?
Just to make sure that you know what they're talking about.
It's actually part of it, but...
The moral and social laws are more or less devoted to the Lord. It means, in other words, they follow what they do what they're supposed to do. As far as they understand from the scriptures, they're following it. Right? So then they surrender. Right? So now, the obvious question is... You know, except for one or two, that doesn't include any of us here in the room. Because we weren't following the regulative principles of the scriptures and all that, and more or less devoted to the Lord. So that is the power of the Lord's devotees coming and preaching. So that's what Prabhupada said, you know, because they'll say, what's our qualification? And Prabhupada said, we have no qualification. Right? So Prabhupada said, he's made our fortune. So by hearing the holy name, by us taking prasad or whatever, then that is the sukriti that is bringing one to that platform where one can take up. Does that make sense? So in that way you become pious. Because otherwise there may not be a whole lot to identify one as pious. Right? Yes.
Can you say that... In previous lives, devotees there was still not pious, or we can at a certain time for sure, because if Srila Prabhupada gave us all the piety and all the credit, means we didn't deserve it.
No, that's why devotees, because the Lord won't interfere with your independence. So, therefore, the point that Krishna's making here is means this is how he's doing. These they surrender, these don't. But the point is how you get them to come to that point of surrender. That's then the devotees, because they don't care about your independence. You know, it's quite obvious, right? You know, like that. So they just come in and just let you know about what you're supposed to be doing, not what you think you should be doing. Does that make sense? Like that. So that means it doesn't matter the background. So one could be from a very, very, not a very good background. You know. Okay. So one devotee was telling me, he was sitting with Prabhupada and some guest came, and then they're talking. You know, there's a gentleman, like that Indian gentleman. And then I don't know how the conversation got around to him, but at what point Prabhupada made a comment, about that devotee who was sitting there. That his life before Krishna consciousness was absolutely abominable, like that. And he had never talked to Prabhupada about what he used to do or anything like that. So he was always, it was kind of like afterwards, like, how did Prabhupada know? like that. So it's yes.
So say Prabhupada, he distributed so liberally, but yet we see that despite so many people coming into contact, many didn't take to the process. So surely it would be that element of Sukriti.
No, that remains. It means Bhakti Sukriti remains. So you see the devotees go by in Harinam. That goes, that's, interesting, it's unique, right? People out in bed sheets and, doing public, a moving public musical demonstration, So it's something new, like that. And, so that happens enough, and then after some time, then these other elements come up. Then one gets that Sukriti to, try to find out, to inquire, to. But it builds up, so it says many, many. So that maybe just from preaching, not maybe from so much from lifetimes before, and now because it's when it comes to a certain maturity. So now by that one Harinam, that was enough to bring it to maturity, or that one Rath Yatra, or that one time of getting prasad, because you have these stories. The devotees come. It's just, I think it was Madhu Dvisa. He was just, I think he was just wandering. He had whatever he owned in a little, backpack. And he was walking along. He happened to come across the San Francisco Rath Yatra. He's not from there. He's just passing through. And he saw that, and it was nice, and he liked the thing, threw his bag up onto the Rath, took part in the festival. And when he went back to the temple, he went with them, and that's it. So that's all it took. So that means it was really close. Does that make sense? Because so many others are coming there and taking part in that, and when they finish, they go home and, talk about how it was a great festival, over a American flag, reefer and stuff like that, so they just move on. So that is just adding. But then these kinds of things, that was just what it took. That was what was left. So how long that takes, how many lifetimes, that we don't know. We don't worry about it. We just know the process is there. Because the detail isn't important. You're sitting in the water, out in the middle of the ocean, and a boat happens to come, and the boat comes by. And then before you'll get out, you really want to know is that, what did you trip over on the deck there that you fell in the water, and did you exactly which toe got caught on it, and was it more the toe or was it the shoe itself is what actually got caught in that, you know what I'm saying? And they're saying, you know, throwing you the line that, and they're just telling you, grab the line, we'll pull you out. And you go, no, 1 minute, I got to work this out, you know. Does that make sense? So that's why, other than what will help you get out, all these other contemplations, these digressions, aren't so important. You know what I'm saying? Like yesterday, I think we ran into a few of them, right? Does that make sense? That if that's the topic, then you're seeing that topic in connection to Krishna. Then the details are important. They fill out the thing. Right? Like if we're discussing how not to trip on deck, then, you know, we could get into all these different things. Does that make sense? But when we're talking about getting out of the water onto the deck, you know, then talking about tripping on the deck, it really, even though it's maybe have its place, it has nothing to do with them. Does that make sense?
But it was simply for the point of why does it fructify in some and not fructify in other, even though...
No, it's not your question. I'm talking about yesterday's question. Okay. So then we'll continue on Monday with lesson 30. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarva Veda Bhaktivedanta ki, Janitai Gaur.